This is Aja, the recording of the Senate's meeting of February 9th, 2012.
First of all, just a few goings on to report. I sent out an email today with notes on a couple of issues, so please read that. And in response to something that came up at Senate 2 weeks ago, which was a question about the emeritus policy and disability retirement, I'm reporting back that Faculty Standards and Affairs actually discussed that issue this fall and came back with a recommendation for no change, that that getting into that issue in the disability policy, in that emeritus policy, they felt would open up lots of different issues that the attorney tells us are currently completely, the policy is completely okay. But as soon as you start opening up exceptions, you get into lots of difficulties. So I'm not planning to pursue that issue any further, given that they just recently looked at it. Also, the Green Music Center University Affairs Committee met yesterday. That committee includes faculty from all schools and student body president and other folks. Excellent meeting, working on getting some of the academic pieces of the university more front and center at the Green Music Center. Hopefully in the coming months we'll have more to say about that. But it was a good discussion about academic programs that might take better advantage of the university and use the Music Center to really raise the profile of those kind of programs. Most obviously centered on music, of course, but hopefully wider than that. That's all that I have particular to report. Are there any questions you need? So we'll go on to the agenda. Are there changes to the agenda? Senator Vance?
I'm the one of the co-chairs of the Clinic Diversity Subcommittee, and we'd like to ask that the second reading on the resolution be postponed to the next Senate meeting because one of the people who helped craft the revised version couldn't be here, has to be out of the off campus for a university business. And I just found that out.
So, recommendation to postpone business item number one to the next Senate meeting. Is there any objection to that? So we'll strike business item one from this agenda. Any other changes? Any requests for time certain for reports?
Just whatever.
Okay. I think we'll be good to get to you, but I'll make sure. Anything else? Okay. Any objections to approving the agenda? All right. That's all done. So it's minutes. We have one set of minutes. Oh, let me tell you, there are two proxies. Here is Carmen. Carmen Works is here for Senator Brannon, and Cory Moon is here for, as a CFA representative. Any other proxies? Okay. Thank you. So, minutes of January 26th for email. Do we have any corrections or changes to those? You don't look like Dr. Vance.
Thank you.
You're no, but you're not a proxy. You're actually on the Senate.
Yeah,
John was a one semester replacement.
Right.
Okay. So, corrections to the minutes of January 26th. Okay, Senator, statewide Senator Nelson isn't here to comment on her report. Members, that yes, she did express some surprise at an instance of the chancellor apologizing for some issues around shared governance, but people didn't actually faint as the minutes report. So we'll correct that. Are there any other changes? Any objections to approving those? Those are done. I haven't received any correspondence other than my normal 100 emails a day. And, so we'll move right into the consent item, there's one consent item that was emailed out, which is a degree designation change from a Bachelor of Arts to Bachelor's of Music. Is there any objection to approving that item? I don't see any. So the consent item is approved. Senator Galinsky, can we go ahead to the calendar guidelines?
Yes.
All right, move on to business item number two, academic calendar guidelines.
You have. By the way, I don't know if it made it into this packet copy, but in the very back of your packet, there should be proposed academic year calendars. And we're in the 2012 semester, and it should be 12/21. I don't believe that 12/20 is a Friday. So if you make that change.
And in 2013, it should be 12/20, not 12/18.
Yeah. 12/20 and 2013.
So do you want to give any introduction to the guidelines?
Yes. While I'm working on my Mitt Romney white sideburn, I also had a chance to work with the UC on the guidelines that were provided to us by the academic program. And we had to do some revisions naturally because of the fact that we have a shorter space-time now between the end of the fall semester and the beginning of the spring semester. As dictated, that came down from the Chancellor's office, we end earlier. We looked at various possibilities, but basically what we have in order to meet the number of instructional days is a schedule that follows a number of guidelines. We did debate where spring break should be, and the students had some input into that. Which I thought was helpful, that they wanted spring break to be at a time that was more likely to be decent weather. Of course, you never know, because now it's February, but it feels like the end of April. Maybe we should have spring break now. I don't know. Anyway, so we also debated this Thanksgiving break, but we want to be consistent as possible. And so we came up with the language that you have in the guidelines. There are two copies of guidelines, one that has revisions on the front, one that is actually revised on the back, right before the calendar.
So, y'all, that's it. Okay, so this is a
fade away.
This is the first reading, and I just want to remind you how this works. The Senate approves and recommends the academic calendar guidelines. The provost's office each year then implements the guidelines to create the actual academic calendar. So the thing on the back is not what we're talking about. We're talking about the page that both sides, it says Tecumseh State University academic calendar guidelines. And this is the first reading, so major objections, suggestions for improvement, things of that nature. Senator Overby.
Well, considering what you just said, maybe not, but there is a just a typo on 3B, where the spring break will be closer.
Say that again.
3B is the spring break will is closer.
Yeah, so these notes, the notes about the 2012-2013 through 2016-17 calendars are informational. So we're working mostly with these guidelines here. Senator Lee.
It's a minor thing, but on number 7 in the guidelines, in the first version of this page, says spring break will fall closer to the middle of the semester. And then on the back of that page where it's correct, it looks like the R of closer has been stuck out, so will fall close to the middle of the semester. Is that right?
Okay.
Senator Larson.
On the last page with the calendar, the semester ends in the fall section, but now you just mentioned 15 and 16 are just projected dates. Was there any reason that in 2012 through 14, the semester ends on a Friday and 15, 16 on a Thursday? I understand 2015, I don't understand 2016. Is there any reason that 2016 ends on a Thursday instead of a Friday?
I don't know. Is Elaine Sundberg here?
Well, because Friday, December the 25th, is Christmas Day.
Yes, 2015, I understand. Okay. 2016.
So he's just pointing out that in 2016, Friday the 23rd would be a possibility for the end.
Oh, I see. You know, I would have to go back and count the number of days. It has to do with the number of days of instruction as well as the number of faculty work days, such as grade days, etc. So, you know, in any case, we have to add up to a total of 170 work days between instruction and faculty work days. So, I would have to go back and calculate whether it's should be Thursday the 22nd or Friday the
23rd. So, again, let me remind you, focus on the pages that say Sonoma State University Academic Calendar Guidelines. Yes, Senator Madonna.
Here you are. I have questions about number one, equal distribution of instructional days throughout the week. I think there are five. I don't really understand what that means. Number two, avoid partial weeks caused by federal and state holidays. So Labor Day is a Monday. Does that mean we don't meet the rest of the week? I mean, that's what my reading of the guidelines would indicate. I think we looked at this in Student Affairs Committee and they gave it back to me and said, good luck.
So, Senator Kulinski, why don't you just keep track of these and you can either respond at the end or you can just take them back to the EPC and bring back answers for a second reading. Senator Sands.
Well, I know that maybe part of the problem is in some of these statements of what they will or won't do, there isn't any explanatory language, and so maybe that's why people second guess. So, for instance, on that last one, how do you avoid partial weeks? Well, vacation weeks could land on top of a Monday holiday, and that reduces the odds of having certain days of the week get more often than others. So I don't know if there's little tweaks in there that, you know, this is shorter, but it seems like every time the calendar comes up, because I've seen this come through a couple times through the years, we have these same kinds of conversations. And so if the need that's being met by the stipulation is articulated somewhere, then that helps us. You know, and like the circumstances that cause those problems, maybe that can be in there just a little bit.
Any more questions, comments, Senator Leeson?
Just what I don't know if this would be helpful or not. Given the conversation about needing the right number of instructional days and everything, if perhaps that number of needed instructional days were in fact in the guideline. Because I mean, the ones that allow for equal number of instructional days throughout the week. But somewhere in here, given all this, it would be kind of nice to see what the number of instructional days in fact would be.
Senator Sands.
Yes.
Okay, so, Elaine, would you like to respond?
Yes. We are constrained by regulations that come down from the Chancellor's office. And that's an entirely separate memo that comes out every year. It's, you know, about 12 pages thick of what's defined as a faculty work day, what is defined. And so when I construct the calendars, I follow that. And I also follow then the specifics that Sonoma the state would like to see included. So it's really two pieces of information that are provided. These guidelines are ones that the faculty wish to be implemented, if possible, when meeting the system-wide requirements. So I think, you know, that's really the issue there.
Okay. I'm convinced it's not.
Yeah, and if you look at the notes, you'll see under number one what the requirements are. Requirement of 147 days of instruction, additional 23 work days, and then what some of those work days are per chancellor's office cognitive definition, and then the need to have calendar days for the payroll requirements. So that's why those notes are included, to try and give you a better understanding of how this calendar gets developed each time.
I was just curious what the history is on the 3-day off for Thanksgiving. Like, how many CSU campuses do the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday? I know a lot of students go off Monday, Tuesday. What's the history on that?
So, anybody you want to respond with the history of our Thanksgiving schedule? She's wondering about the history of our thing, having Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whether we know if that's what other CSUs do, things like that.
So I think the other CSUs do a variety of different things. I know that we've been taking the Wednesday before Thanksgiving for a while, and I think that was recommended by President Arianna, if I'm not mistaken, because we don't want students traveling long distances the day of Thanksgiving. And then every year we discuss whether or not we should also take Monday and Tuesday. And sometimes, you know, and we discuss it every year. So we discussed it this year, we'll discuss it again when we do the calendar guidelines next one. So, we can take it, but then the instructional days, the work days that are Monday and Tuesday, they have to be carved out of something else.
I wasn't insinuating having a week off. I just meant, like, I went to another campus where we did have school on Wednesday, and so we traveled Wednesday evening to go to Thanksgiving.
And the other schools may not be as heavily populated by people who come from long distances. So, like, San Francisco State is much more of a commuter campus. And most JCs, they work the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
All right, any more feedback, any more comments in this first reading? Armand, did you want to respond to any now, or do you just want to take them all and go back to BGC and come back next time?
Well, let me ask you a question back. Will responding now expedite anything, or is it better just to take them back?
No guarantees.
Because number one really is designed so that we can not have any particular class day meetings adversely impacted by holidays. Now, there are a number of holidays, for example, in fall that are fixed on certain days, like Labor Day is always the Monday. But Veterans Day is a floating holiday, so it may not always be on the same day of the week, and might be on a weekend, in which case it would be celebrated. If it's on a Sunday, it would be celebrated on observed on the Monday, and if we're on a Saturday, on a Friday, so on and so forth. So I know that guideline number one sounds kind of, you know, vague to some of you in the audience here today, but the intent is to try to preserve the sanctity of courses that meet on certain days and try to make sure that no one course meeting day or no set of course meeting days is adversely affected due to the vagaries of the holiday. Number two, I think, sort of follows out of number one, and that is because there are some partial weeks that are caused by holidays. We can't avoid all of them. We can't avoid Thanksgiving, for example, because it exists. We can't avoid the fact that there are other holidays in the winter season because they exist. For example, King Day, Martin Luther King Jr. Day in January necessitates a certain, you know, jiggering around of the schedule, as you can see in some years, because of the fact that we want to try to not have instruction begin either on that day or on the day after, if possible. But it does happen that due to 2016 instruction will begin the day after. So that cuts, you know, that really makes it worse for the Monday only class and the Monday Wednesday class and so forth. So that's kind of the rationale behind that language in one and two. The Thanksgiving break, I think Carmen did a nice job of answering that question, so I really don't have much to add. We didn't do a lot of extra research on CSU campuses, but the intent is to try to get, as Elaine explained, meet as many instructional days as possible without pushing the start of the fall semester, for example, back earlier into August, which was another thing that we discussed in the ECC committee, and thought that that was not going to be a great starting point for a discussion.
Thanks. The question I heard around one and two sounded like they, one and two, it's clear what they mean to people who are speaking to developing academic calendars, and to people who aren't, as much, they might not be written as clearly as they could be. So that might be something to think about. Senator Watt.
I just had more of a historical question than a specific comment on this. Which was, I was wondering, has the campus ever had something like a couple of study days or a dead week or something between the end of instruction and the beginning of finals?
Not that I know. Okay, thank you.
We actually did have a dead day, I want to say 5 or 6 years ago, and it had to do with the way in which the calendar got constructed that year. I mean, if it were the will of the faculty to do that, but again, you have to keep in mind that you still have to have the 147 days of instruction and, you know, have all of the other things fall into place as well. So that would be a major revision. I do want to add that the way the guidelines are written does make it, does instruct me or whoever it is doing the calendar to look at those issues. In other words, when it says to have as many equal distribution of instructional days, when I construct the calendar, I count how many Mondays would be in that term, how many Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And if it's 14 to 15, I think I'm doing okay. If it shows that there's only 12 Mondays, then I feel that it's time to go and look at a different construction of the calendar, which might involve starting a week earlier or ending a week later so that you get an additional Monday in. So I find the way in which these are worded to actually be exactly what's appropriate, so that you do have the flexibility of working around to make a calendar that really does meet as many of these sometimes conflicting issues as possible.
Okay, we've reached the end of the first reading, so let's be back next time for a second reading. And we'll go on now. Go on now. I've got the box. It's actually called the Box Start Here campaign. And so, Senator Ring is not here, but Amanda is here in his place. All right, remember your last name.
Okay.
To introduce the campaign to us.
Yes. I'm Amanda. I'm the chair of the Senate for AS. I'm talking for Wall today. Basically, throughout the CSU, there's a CSU-wide campaign, which was actually initiated by one of our students here on the SSU campus, Sean Richards, who happens to hold a position in CSSA, which is our California State Student Association, which is a collaboration of basically representatives from each campus collaborating, kind of like their own government, to push legislative issues and talk about different things going on in different campuses. What this campaign is it's a way, it's basically a letter writing campaign to the governor about how budget cuts have impacted SSU and all the CSUs and the impact it's had on our students, our faculty, our staff, and the community. AS has been tabling almost every day so far. Last count, which was a couple days ago, I believe we collected 443 bills in a week. So that was pretty good. We actually ran out of bills. Our goal is to get 1,000 by the time, our goal is to get 1,000, at least 1,000, a minimum of 1,000. There is a box circulating around the CSU, so it started in San Diego and has been making its way up to California. I believe right now it's at Stanislaus, and at the end of the month it'll be here. And we're going to have a rally to kind of promote and inform people on campus what's going on with the state and legislative-wise, and invite more people to fill out our bills. So we have little bills that I was supposed to bring, but we actually ran out of them and had to reorder them. They weren't ready in time. You're going to pass them around, have everyone fill them out. And basically, there are bills about this big that have a picture of Jerry Brown's face on them. And it says $750 million, that's the amount that's been cut from the CSU. And then it says like SSU on it, and they're blue. Every school does it in their own color. So like San Diego had it in red, we're doing it blue, and on the back it's just blank. So students and faculty and whoever has been writing their stories on the back about how they've personally been affected by budget cuts, and we're collecting them, and they will all the bills from all the campuses will eventually end up at the March for Higher Education in March at the Capitol building. So yeah, this is going to be the time when I pass out bills, but I don't have any. So if you see us tabling, or if you'd like a representative to come talk to your class about it, we're happy to do class wrap. We're trying to meet our goal and been very active about it. And we'll also be, well, if we get bills by tonight, we'll be passing that at the PAC event tonight.
When is the day of the rally?
Huh?
Do you know the day of the rally?
Oh, I think it's February 23rd. Is that right? Okay. Around there.
The day that the box will be here on campus is the day of our next Senate meeting. So I'll ask Senator Ramey to bring bills to that meeting, and we can fill them out on the day that the box is here. And I think that they'll be able to bring the box here for us to stuff our bills into. The faculty trustee will also be visiting the Senate that day, so it's a good day for us to have a clear show of our support for the effort to reverse some of the slide in CSU funding. So are there questions for Amanda?
Yep.
Yes, Senator.
Would it be helpful to send a PAC to each department chair so that faculty can write there as well? And it seems a shame just to only have the senators and whoever happens to walk by.
Yeah. I'll talk to our statewide issue center who's organizing and running the campaign and see if she wants to do that. Like I said, we're waiting for the bill, but we're very happy with our turnout so far. I mean, we've only been promoting it for like a week, so pretty good. And it will continue for until the box leaves here, and then I think from here it goes to Humboldt. So.
Any more questions or comments? Thank you. And thanks to Associated Students for doing that important campaign. All right, let's see. We have reports. So, President Tarmignana, would you like to give a report?
If you wait long enough, probably the box will have to be changed from 750 to 950 million. We are in for a trigger in case of $200 million in case the tax measures proposed by the governor are not approved by the electorate in November. Depends upon who you talk to. But most people are in the know, but I don't think nobody really is in the know. The chances of that ballot measure be approved are iffy, especially since there probably will be at least two other major ballot measures basically targeting some of the same population who are targeted in the governor's budget, which are what he calls high-income earners, but are also in the governor's, there's a tax, a sales tax measure of half a cent. Conventional wisdom is that if when you have too many similar propositions, it's highly confusing to the electorate, and then they tend to say no to all of them. And I think that could easily go. If there is a trigger pull, I can assure you that the impact on the CSU and its 24 units will be dramatic. And there will be, the changes in many ways will make us not as easily recognizable as we are today in terms of the measures you will have to take, either on a system-wide basis or, more frightening, on a local economy basis. Or I have to tell you that those prospects are keeping some of us awake more often than we would like to. Latest letter analyst for all incomes has issued a report which is critical of the governor's proposal for higher education on a variety of reasons. One, because the governor's proposal does not establish an enrollment target for the CSU or the UC. And leaves that question to each system. It also is critical of the $200 million trigger because of the enormous impact it will have to happen and how late in the year it will come. It will come as of January 1, 2013, which means that the actions that you have to take will have to be equivalent to actions counting for $400 million because half of the year will be over, but the amount will be the same. So you will have to take actions equal to $400 million. If you want to figure what that is for us, it's $9.2 billion. If you want to do quick math. We're still dealing with figuring out how to make the $100 million trigger permanent for next year. And that also is going to take some significant impact. The legislative analyst is also critical of the governor's proposal to changes in the Calgrant, basically, which both Calgrant A and Calgrant B increase the minimum GPA by basically a point in each case. And it limits the amount of Calgrant money going to private to that of the amount per student maximum amount going to the CSC. So it might create a shift of students going to private to public in order to keep the Calgrant. Therefore, those are not, none of those are particularly good news. On the side of good news, I want to be glad to report that the university has received about $1.3 million from a state planning for scholarships, and that will increase the amount of money available to scholarships, and this will be for students who are meritorious with need. Therefore, it's a combination of those two. It's not just students with need. There's a merit and a component, but it does increase our potential number of scholarships by almost a third of what we're giving today. And I think that's true. And like I said, the money. thinking about it from a number of years ago, but in this math, it takes that person to go to heaven. I'm sure this person did.
That's all I have.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, teacher.
Louder. I'm getting older.
So am I. Do you have any idea what the nature of the changes are that we considered should we get this extra 200 million trigger? I know that the chancellor has said no campuses will be closed, but I can imagine anything off the table with that happens.
I will suspect that it will include a review of our program offerings, consolidation of programs, in cases I think it might include a potential layoff of some type of employees. Not doing a number of things that you are presently doing, etc. I think those are the kinds of things you would do if you were to do these on a campus-by-campus basis. If you were to do things on a system basis, then it would be different. It would be, anyway, like something like how would you reduce your payroll cost over all the universities on some form of a basis? We did that before when we had furloughs. Shortening of the school year would make your calendar interesting. That is what K-12 proposes to do if they are assigned their share of, I think it's their number is going to be about $4.2 billion. They are talking about shortening the school year by 3 weeks. We closed, when we did furloughs, we basically furloughs for this campus amounted to close to $6 million, number not too dissimilar. And that, I think we had 24 days of furloughs, or something of that nature. It all depends, Catherine, if you do system-wide matters, or if you do campus-wide matters, they're all dramatic. I don't foresee a significant fee increase to cover that. That would require a fee increase of about 35% or so. I don't see that in the offing. But that's another tactic. It all depends on how they decide to meet those changes.
Senator Fass.
I had a question about the Cal Grant. Is this a proposal that's being discussed, or is it actually going to be implemented in terms of increasing the grade point average for eligibility? And secondly, are there any figures of how many students at Sonoma State and also CSUY would lose their Cal Grants because of this? Or what percentage of
students? Let me answer your second question because it's easy. It will not affect the students who are already enrolled at institutions. It would be for future students. It will affect probably somewhere around, depends upon how you figure, could affect probably up to 10 to 12,000 potential students or more. It's hard to calculate. It is a proposal which is contained in the governor's budget proposal. Therefore, it has to go through the legislative process, etc. So it's one of his many proposals dealing with the lack of resources that the state funds. Again, this would not happen before, at the earliest, July 1st, and it probably would not be operative for it right away, but for the year after that. Remember, we select two students in November, and therefore, it'll be for the year after that.
Senator Chan.
I'd like to ask two short questions, and then I might have another one, depending on your answer.
Yes, no, maybe.
First one. Okay. Is the $1.3 million one time or annual?
The 1.3 is both. It came from one-time sources for the current year, 2011-12, it becomes permanent beginning of the 12-13 year.
Then on.
It was temporary until the trigger was pulled, and then, you know, and now as next year it becomes permanent.
Then my follow-up question is, I assume if this...
And it's 2.3, not 1.3, it's
2.3. Okay,
the
person lied.
I'm sorry?
The person who's making the gift.
Are you talking about the
scholarship? Yeah. No, the person who gave us the gift. Oh, the 1.3. Oh, I was thinking on the previous question. Change that. The 1.3 is... real money. it's forever there. It's added to the endowment for a scholarship.
Okay.
But what you get is the interest on the 1.3.
Yes.
No. And the answer to the second question, the person, it has passed. And that was part of a planned giving that this individual had done while he was alive, but it became available upon his passing, and this individual passed sometime in the middle of last year. And it took this time for the state to be resolved.
Can I have one more question?
Can
you answer one more question?
Sure.
Will you consider, or would you entertain the idea that Sonoma State would start a capital campaign to raise money? If you run into all the shortfall, you're going to have a few million now, 9.2 million in the fall. Would that make sense that we start raising money?
First, the kinds of money you raise on a capital campaign are almost negligible for operating expenses. That's just the nature of capital campaigns. You get money for buildings, programs, scholarships, etc., but they do not give you money to pay salaries or to pay electricity, etc. It just doesn't happen. The best you can hope is to get undesignated money that you can use for whatever. In the CSU, the amount of undesignated money we get in fundraising is probably less than 2%, about 1%. Even for a private institution, it's usually less than 10-15%. Stanford has just finished a campaign who brought probably close to $6 billion, and I would bet you that probably less than 15% if on this issue. Therefore, you just don't get money for the things that you need the money for. Would I consider a capital campaign? Yes. But
it requires
a little more. It requires a little more answers than just a simple yes. A capital campaign would require probably an investment of over $1 million for a period of a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. A 5-year campaign will probably require an investment of any around $3 million. And to hire a staff, you know, as part of that. I have to tell you that at this moment, there is not the ability to make that kind of an investment at the institution. And thirdly, it does require also a better economic perspective, where people feel that the economic situation both of the country and of itself looks encouraging and prosperous. Right now, and this will be the subject of a long, arduous presidential debate, it is at best a cloudy, soft, and uncertain. Of course, the answer is yes, but I don't think the timing is at this moment.
Thank you.
Senator Bass.
As a follow-up on this sort of trend, this discussion, and that is, are we going to have a research for a replacement for the Vice President's development?
At some point.
If there isn't one right now.
We have an acting Vice President for development. His name is Eric Green. He used to be the Associate Vice President.
Right. I wanted to follow up with one question just in the budget cycle. In my experience here, usually at this point in the budget cycle, we're engaged in action towards the legislature and trying to get them to have something to say about the budget that goes forward. And I'm wondering, do you understand why we're not hearing any of that except from the associated students? Why the chancellor's office that isn't pushing that?
There is behind the scene, but that the reason for that is that the legislature has not taken up the budget at all and has made the decision that they are probably not going to take up the budget until May and the May revise. Therefore, in order to get that, we are engaging that, but it's not in a full front attack, simply because it takes two to tango, and one of the dancers is absent from the dance hall.
All right. Thanks. All right, we move on to our next report. Provost Robertson.
Just one informational item. Effective fall 2012, the Community Counseling Center will stop offering internships, but will continue to offer a practicum to the first year students in the graduate degree in counseling. So, we're transitioning out of using it for the internship part of that degree program. That's a very small program, probably has about 6 or 8 graduate students. No one will be impacted. Every one of them will be found an internship off campus and will be consistent in the way we provide that internship. And this is something the department felt was a good time to do and was in full consultation with the department. That's the answer.
Questions for the provost? Senator Wentworth, just because it's been raised by multiple students, what is going to be the impact on the community that's currently being served by them? Or not the students themselves, but the community served?
It's very difficult to get a feel on that. There's been quite a long history of issues that were expressed. We don't need to get into the issues. They may be valid, they may not be. One of the issues that was expressed a few years ago before I got here was, you know, should we be bringing community partners onto the campus for this kind of facility, which is really a training ground for graduate students. I believe that we're effectively not involving the community now. We're using students to do the training aspect. So I would argue the impact should be minimal. I'm going to meet with Dr. Doolittle tomorrow, and I'm going to ask him if he's willing to use his off-site facility to continue these internships, in which case there would be no impact whatsoever to the community if he's willing to do that. At the moment, the interns are dealt with in a variety of 3 different ways. Where they can either go out to a community agency and do their internship in an agency, which is a good solution. A very real community engagement activity. They can work at Dr. Doolittle's off-site facility, or they can do it internally in the university. So we just feel that doing it external is a good paradigm shift, and now's the time to do it. But I stress, not a single student will be impacted by this change. Very small amount.
More questions?
I know you won't be surprised, but EPSAC is very concerned about the canceling of the search for the director of the ORSP. I understand that these are really hard times. I know we don't know all that's going on, but it seems like it would be the kind of seed money that gets you more money. And there is something particular about trying to cultivate faculty members as they develop the ability to go for external grants. So I know that I'll be working with Melinda Barber and others to try and mitigate the situation as much as possible, but we would very much like, if any way in the future, that this be one of the first things considered for opening up whenever the opportunity may to self-present.
I want to assure everyone here that it still is my number one priority. I feel it's essential. It's becoming more essential as we move into these troubled financial times. I hear you. I would also venture it's essential because as we go through these changes, which will happen this year, we have to be very aware that we want to retain our university status and be a university. And if we cannot offer scholarships to faculty and students, then we're failing in that. We have had to cancel the search because it would be really foolish to proceed given what we might be facing. On the other hand, we might be able to accommodate the position internally, and we would bring that to the committee to see if that's a solution that's palatable. And if not, we will hope to bring the search back when times improve. But it is high priority for me for those reasons, particularly the importance of retaining scholarship on this campus. Otherwise, we'll become a community college.
Thank you. Any questions?
Okay. Move on. Chairman Purser.
Well, I don't have a report from instruction and function today. We did not in business, but get out the vote, people. We've extended the period for nominations. We're certainly a few people saying that they're going to nominate or someone. Presumably, they've actually talked to first. This is not a surprise for some of these positions. And also, if you can, again, help your colleagues understand that there's something else on that ballot. The constitutional change is on the ballot. We need to get enough people turning out to vote for that or voting online for that when it becomes possible. We need 50% turnout of faculty, and 2/3 of that turnout has to vote one way or the other to make the decision. So we really need to make sure people notice that there's something that we need to run for.
Any questions for Tara and Purser? All right. Vice President Lopez Phillips, would you like to give a report?
Sure, I'll make a report. I think of interest to this group is we finished our interviews for the MCC. We had our last couple of finalists in the other day. The committee is gathering its information and giving it back to me, both in writing, and there's a chance for the committee to meet tomorrow. There's a chance for me to meet with the MCC committee tomorrow morning and get feedback from the committee verbally. And I'm hoping that in the next couple of weeks, after that we'll hear about the strengths and weaknesses of the candidates, that we'll be able to check references and then make an offer. That's it.
Can you tell us anything about applications and admissions and things like that for the fall?
We don't have any applications. We've given them all back.
So we, again, as I reported earlier, we had one of the really strong applicant pool. We're actually up 1,000 students more than we were the year before, folks wanting to come to the school, so we're still very highly sought after as a CSU campus. We've been really processing quite a bit. We're probably about 1,000 offers of admission over what we were the same time last year. We are now kind of shifting. We're really working with our first-time population. We're shifting gears and going after our transfers now and starting to process those. We have a very strong pool. We're still only looking at students with an index of 3,200 and above for our first year class. I'm trying to make sure we bring you the best prepared students we can. We're continuing down that path, and we'll wait for the budget to play itself out and see if there's an impact at the moment. My sense is it won't. All right, thank you. Questions for Vice President Lopez Phillips? Sorry, I wrote that talking a lot today. I just really want to commend you and the administration in these really, really difficult times for recognizing the priority for retention and recruitment and just general campus climate of making sure that we have a functioning multicultural center with a skilled professional at the helm. I know that that's gone through a lot of different machinations in just the few years that I've been here. I think it's really exciting that we're at this moment, and I commend you, I commend the president for making it happen. Thank you.
Senator Warsher. Has there been any changes in the requirements for students to apply at Sonoma State with regards to their preparedness to go into college, or has it been always the same in the last 2 years?
There's some different categories for our local community. We have to accept students with an index of 2,900. That's kind of a floor or above. And then you have all the different indexes of students from out of state, in state, down south, all over. What we've looked at is who are those students that need less developmental work? And we think around 3,200 and above are those students, and 32 to 29 are the students that may need some more developmental work. So we've tried to cap it at 3,200 this year. So it's actually a floating index, and that's just a change this year that we're trying to hit our enrollment numbers with that. And we're waiting to see how people put in deposits. We have about 80 students that have already deposited and said they're coming first year students to Sonoma State.
So this does change year by year.
And it's done with the Enrollment Management Council, with the Provost's Office. There's a team of us that meet and decide on some of these directions with enrollment.
Mark? Okay. Thank you. We'll go on to Senator Husky. Would you like to give an Associated Students report?
Sure. Okay. So we are in the process of recruiting for elections right now. Our applications for students who want to run for office for next year are due next Friday. We've been tabling every day for a lot of the stuff going on, and that's one of our top priorities, making sure we have good students who are passionate about this and want to sit in these awesome meetings next year. And run our organization and basically advocate for students. So if you know of any good students you think might be interested, send them our way. We have all the information available on the AS website, noma.edu/as. And then we also have been working on a lot of resolutions lately. Similar to how I hear your guys' cycle go second semester, we've seen to have a lot more resolutions and policy coming through our table. So we passed one on Tuesday about endorsing a rideshare program, which is basically part of a sustainability initiative. Our sustainability senator is really passionate in putting like six resolutions on the table. I got two more in my inbox and I get back to the office. And we're currently looking at one about an internal commitment from AS to sustainability and practicing more sustainable practices. That will be on our table soon. We also passed one endorsing the Bucks Start Here campaign, just so we have formal proof that this is why we're doing it, basically, because we're very supportive of it. And then we're also promoting PAC Again, which is tonight. So if anyone doesn't have anything to do tonight, come support your athletics and men and women basketball teams at PAC Again. Our goal is to get as many people as possible into the gym. So we've been promoting that, and we'll be tabling there tonight, promoting elections and school spirit. And we also have a policy on our table for recommendation to the president about the referendum policy that I've collaborated with Professor Mandati and a couple other faculty on that's coming to our table. So we'll see where that ends up.
Now, free basketball games. When is it? 5:30 men to 7:30?
5:30 is women, 7:30 is men. Mm-hmm. And we made some cool posters that they beat LA, so we're pretty jazzed about it.
I have a deal. If I recruit some students to run for AS, you go recruit some faculty to run for chairs.
I don't know.
Okay, any questions for Associated Students Chair Kostman? All right, statewide Senator Nelson, I'm Mark Wilson. Does either of you have a report? Okay. Let's see. Senator Paluji Callahan, do you have an APC report?
Yes. Just as noted last time, we have two primary tasks that we're focused on. One is updating an existing MOU with extended education, and the other is creating a document outlining policies for online education. We created two different work groups today, and in the coming weeks we'll be working in those teams to craft those documents. And once we have them, we will bring them here.
Questions for APC Chair Lindsay Callahan? Okay. Senator Kaminsky, you have an APC report.
Yes, EPC did not establish a colony on the moon, but we did. we did finally approve the Ukiah Liberal Studies program review after, I think it's a 4-year struggle. We also approved, in the spirit of contraction, we did not throw out the baby with bathwater, but we did approve changes and revisions to unanimously to anthropology major, sociology major, and the philosophy department curriculum, which, if approved by an executive committee, should be coming to you in the next fortnight.
Any questions for EPC Chair Kaminsky about their proposed moon colony? Or anything else? All right, let's see, Senator Sejas, the standards and affairs.
Yeah. So today at FTAC we were looking at the change in the policy for the Excellence in Teaching Award, primarily calendar effects of the shifted semester in the spring. So that'll be coming forward to XCOM soon, probably getting out to the rest of us very shortly thereafter. I'd like to draw your attention to the upcoming Faculty Expo on March 7th. You should be watching for notifications. They'll be coming out soon. I know it's coming in fast. So if you have any research that you'd like to be highlighting in this thing, pull out the old trifold, come on down. The biggest concern that we've got on the coming horizon that I'd like to get you ready to be thinking about next month is the sabbatical DIP policy revisions are coming forward. We did a first reading at FSAC today. It went pretty well. I think we've caught most of the things. We'll do our formal second reading next week and then bring it to XCOM right after. So we're hoping that in March, the 8th, 22nd, something like that, we can bring it through. I did want to give some advance notice. We're not addressing the merits side of things. We're going to be looking at the process because that's the main issues that we've been running into trouble with. Where it goes and how it goes and whether it's matching the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, that's the issues that we're doing this time. So just look forward to that. I already expressed our concern about the director of ORSP, so I'm glad to hear that that was definitely heard. And then finally, I'd like to thank, we've got six faculty members who approached FSAC and the SETI task force opening up that discussion, so we'll be moving forward on that project a bit. And if you have any interest or know anybody who's really good at those kinds of evaluative processes, we could still use some more folks, but that's running along well. And that's it.
Questions for FSAC Chair? And Senator Madavi for Student Affairs.
We had an interesting conversation yesterday about a memo that was delivered to us from the Athletics Council related to whether sponsorship should be taken from organizations or enterprises such as Hooters. Yes, we are 14. I have senior eyes, I apologize. We recommended, it was very interesting and far-reaching conversation in which we made a recommendation back to Athletics Council to determine what their own priorities and standards are regarding accepting sponsorships so that, and I'm not even clear what the Hooters has offered sponsorship, but when these things come up, if there are policies and guidelines in place internally, it will make it easier to make those decisions and not seem capricious about them.
Questions for Student Affairs or Chair Madavi? All right. So let's see. CFA Representative Blumhoven, do you have a report?
Only that since we're at impasse in bargaining negotiations, we may be, even as early as this semester, at concerted action with faculty. It's possible to vote on that in April, but the timing is unclear.
Any questions for CFA or move on? Senator
Dowdy? Hey, I have a question about the extent to which CFA is paying attention to the budget issues that are coming up and whether they're starting to plan action, publicity, letting the public know what's going to happen if the sales tax doesn't pass. Is there a campaign around that coming up, I believe?
To publicize the budget, difficulties the budget?
I think that from the president's report, things are going to be dire. I don't even think dire is the right word. If we don't, and I think it's up to us to make some noise with the public. And I'm hoping the CFA would lead that charge.
Yes. Yes, in fact, I think that you'll hear a lot about that in the actions that take place in March. Statewide.
So there is a, the CFA has endorsed a nationwide day of action. March 1st, I believe, is a day that they're, I believe, hoping for actions and demonstrations in support of higher education across the country, and I haven't heard any more than that.
They're having a conference call last night and tonight, and this is the one last night, but we should have more information on that. Kristen.
Thank you.
Any more?
Okay.
So we'll staff representative, would you like to give a report?
Yes. Kristen
maybe send out the resolution staff faculty for the week. But that was, that's a good time of year to do that, just a reminder since the hustle and bustle of the first 2 weeks are just over now. Things are starting to settle down, so maybe we should send it out at the beginning of next time. So thank you for that. I also wanted to let you know that my predecessor, Lane Olson, is conducting a meditation group on Mondays at noon in Stevenson 3040 for staff and whoever would like to come and participate. And I also want to tell you that tonight our musical theater offering for the year is going to be starting Oklahoma. And please come out and hear our fabulous singers and actors. Faculty staff night is Thursday the 16th, and but on the 12th is Sunday matinee is going to be the sing-along. And there'll be a box lunch at intermission, so that might be a good one. Thank you.
Any questions for Staff Representative Baker? Any other items? Items for the good of the order?
I have four good things.
All right.
Okay. First one is I hope that everybody got this invitation to a party in the library. It would have come, in Hawking. So it is February 15th from 4 to 6. Upstairs in Schultz 3301. Please come. It's just because, you know, we're all working hard and everything's awesome. And, well, I mean, not everything. Anyway. Okay, the second thing, and this is hot off the press, is on the 22nd of February at noon, we're going to be having a workshop on affordable teaching and learning options. So this is going to be the first three this semester. So you can come and learn about different things you can do through the bookstore, digital textbooks, textbook rentals. We're going to talk about some issues around library reserves and e-reserves that might be able to help reduce the cost of students for textbooks. And we're trying to get this one done before the 15th of March. And then last or third one is in March, we're doing in the library for Women's History Month, we're celebrating women in science. So we're going to be having an exhibit in the gallery called XX, Women, Art, and Science. And the reception will be March 1st. So please come. It's going to be a truly amazing exhibit. And on the back of this card, you will notice the lecture series that we're going to be having on Wednesday at noon with amazing speakers, including Carmen Wirth. And Maddie's wife. But also, the physics Chanteuse. So it's in 3001. Bring your students with me, and it's going to be taped. So it'll be on YouTube. And then lastly, I don't have so many of these, but don't forget that through the Department of Music on the first Friday of the month, each semester, the music department performs live in the lobby of the library. It's so amazingly fabulous. Everyone come. Okay. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask. If you have any affordable learning questions, don't hesitate to contact me. On the back, there's a little bit more information. Okay, that's all good.
Fantastic. Yes,
I haven't had time to investigate this yet, but since you're bringing up this digital textbooks, maybe this is a question for SAP. I'm not sure I'm understanding a student correctly, but do some digital textbooks require the student to be able to purchase the online access, or otherwise they cannot take the test for the class. It's not like, I'm low income, I can't afford the book, could you put a copy on reserve in the library? Does it ever become a matter of, if you can't afford the textbook, you're not even eligible to take the exam?
How have you heard of that?
I'm trying to determine if I understood the student correctly and if the student's description was accurate. I don't know that yet.
I'm sure there would be a way to work something out. So. But I haven't heard of any of that happening yet.
Yeah, some of us teach, like myself, on Wednesdays between noon and one. Are you thinking of offering a second workshop on this topic for the weekend at a different time, perhaps later in the afternoon?
Yes. Thank you for asking. Would later in the afternoon, would people come to that, be into that? I mean, I know this is a difficult topic, but... And it's really hard to find a day of the week and a time and all that. But if we did something like 3 to 4 on a Tuesday or Wednesday, would that also work? Fridays? How about Friday? No? So it is a variety of times. Okay, yeah, we'll offer it a couple of times.
Anything, any other items for the committee order?